We're taking off in a couple weeks, but we definitely still have teenagers that need some help. So if you're out there and you're like, oh man, I want to be able to help sponsor kids to be able to go to this camp, please come talk to me in the lobby. Honestly, this camp is probably one of the most transformational experiences we have all year long for our high school and middle school students. The amount of testimonies that come out of this camp is insane. A couple years ago, we actually had 26 teenagers get water baptized in the Klamath River, just kind of spontaneously. A couple kids were like, I want to get baptized. And it just like spread. And like, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what God does when you get away and kind of get in nature and just unplug. So just shameless plug, all right? All right, now for a message. Are you guys ready? You guys got your notes? This is part five of a series called Welcome Home. And it's been really fun, honestly, to just kind of explore the idea of if God had a dream house, what would it look like? And obviously, we understand he does have a dream house. It's you and I, right? We are living stones that he's building together. We are the house of God. We are his body here on this earth. Does that make sense? So we've kind of been looking at some different sort of analogies of what that looks like. And today, what we're going to look at is the family table. Oh, man, some of you guys are like, I did not have a good family table growing up. Do you know what I'm saying? And others of you guys, okay, so my home, our family table, when we had dinner together as a family, it was usually a 2 to 3 hour affair of like, we would like make dinner, and then we sit down, and we would eat, and then just conversation. And there's only four of us. I don't come from a big family. And so the four of us could carry conversation for 2 to 3 hours. Like, so I felt bad for my wife after we got married. She was like, she came over for dinner the first time, and we're loud, and my family is like split between German and Irish, so you just have like these really loud voices talking over each other. This poor Savannah just sitting there like, oh dear Lord, what did I get into? She's like, honey, if you could let me talk at some point, that would be nice. You know? I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean let you talk? You just talk. You just start speaking and people listen. Like, so anyways, that was many years ago and I'm still learning. So, but the family table, family dinner time. It's interesting. Family dinner table can actually be through psychology and things like that, it can actually be one of the most powerful times of connection as a family, and it can also be one of the most sort of detrimental experiences that can isolate you, can reinforce struggles or insecurities you're already feeling throughout the day. It is an incredibly powerful time. There's something powerful when you sit down and you eat food and you begin to talk. Isn't that right? How many of you guys, like, you want to hang out with friends, and what do you normally do? Exactly. You go to dinner. You go out to eat. You're like, let's go get some sushi. Dang, man. Apparently, I didn't have enough coffee this morning. Right? You go and get some sushi, right? The family table is a primary place of connection in the home. We'll get into something spiritual here in a little bit, but we just got to lay some groundwork, all right? Some of you guys are like, interesting. So, for reals though, the family table really is a primary place of connection. And I just want to encourage you, if in your home you guys are filled with busyness and schedules and sports games, I would really encourage you to pick at least one day a week where you guys stop everything and you have dinner as a family. It really is like a powerful, powerful tool of reconnection and reestablishing the primary sense of security as an individual. For kids, it's like gold, right? You are just like pouring in a place of safety and connection. There's so much like difficulty and adversity in the world that they experience at school and with friends. And when you come together as a family, it just reaffirms a place of like, I have a home. I have a place of safety. I have a place of connection. If you want more, honestly, there's a book called The Boy Crisis that honestly talks about this. That there's actually tools in the back of the book on how to do this in a good way and like what things to avoid at family dinner time. Because like I said, it can also be a really powerful time of disconnection if it's not done the right way. Just a little plug there. Go get it, read it. But I want us to look at this verse, Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Some of you guys know this. It says this. This is in the Passion Translation. Behold, I'm standing at the door knocking. This is Jesus talking. If your heart is open to hear my voice and you open the door within, I will come into you and feast with you, and you will feast with me. Come on. Jesus wants to have dinner time with you. Do you know what I'm saying? Jesus actually wants to come in and have a family dinner time. This is like, it's just such a cool picture where he's like, hey, listen, I'm at every person's heart knocking. If you want, you open that door. I'm going to come in and we are going to connect face to face. We're going to share life. We're going to share dinner. We're going to talk about random stories and how you tripped and fell and embarrassed yourself at work today. And we're, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is what Jesus actually longs to have with you, is that sort of relationship and connection. What does this have to do with what we're talking about? Well, the family table can, like I said, can either be a place that reaffirms identity and connection, or isolation and disconnection. Right? So when you guys, when you come together both practically as a family and have dinner, but also in this analogy, what happens is it reaffirms identity. Now, this is really powerful because one of the most fought battles that you're going to have in life is over your identity. Jesus asked his disciples, who do you say that I am? Now, he wasn't struggling with his identity, but who Jesus was directly determined who the disciples were. And so what Jesus did is he's asked him, hey, like, do you know who I am? And then later on, he says, as I am, so are you in this world. Does that make sense? Identity is a powerful, powerful thing. And we have to learn where that gets anchored in our life. And we, as talking about the house, the dream house, right? Welcome home. We as a church get to be this place for people all throughout our community. People through our community are struggling with who they are. They're struggling with disconnection. They're struggling with all of these different thoughts throughout their work week, throughout their family life, their broken families, all the different things that they're coming from. They come in, we gather as a family, and this family can either reaffirm that place of disconnection, or it can begin to be a place that shows identity, releases identity, and provides healthy connection. And begins to, through that process, heal hearts, restore marriages, restore families. Come on, this is what we're about, right? Yeah. Come on. All right, so let's look at the family table in a little bit of a practical way, right? When you're a little baby, what happens? You just show up and eat. You know what I'm saying? You make a mess. You know what I'm saying? I have four children. All right, let me just tell you about the amount of mess we have. I swear, we decided to get a dog just to help with the amount of food that gets spilled around the table. Anybody with little children know what this looks like. I didn't realize, honestly, we'd gotten this dog when Savannah was, we had just found out we were pregnant. So she was still a puppy when we had Tristan, right? We didn't realize how much food she actually ate at dinner until we went back to my parents' house for dinner, and they don't have a dog. And so Tristan's eating, and they're just like, oh, yeah, he's actually pretty clean. Like, he doesn't really make that much of a mess. That's what we're thinking. And we look down, and it's just chaos all over the floor. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea. Roxy literally just lays under his chair at the time, and we just like, whoop, just grab little bits of food as soon as it would fall, right? You show up as a baby, you just eat. You just get to enjoy what everybody else cooked. Do you know what I'm saying? You don't have to clean up after yourself. You don't even have to get yourself in that chair. Do you know what I'm saying? You literally show up and everyone does everything for you. Right? And then what happens? As you grow, you begin to contribute a little bit. You get to an age where all of a sudden you're using a utensil, you know, and you hopefully make less of a mess. Right? And then eventually you get to a point where maybe you're going to help clear the table off. Maybe you're in the kitchen helping your mom cook a little bit, or your dad cook, whoever likes to cook in your family. If it's barbecue, that's me, right? Or breakfast. I cook some amazing breakfasts, just saying. But, you know, you're in there cooking a little bit. And as you get older, there's a point where you begin to transition from just consuming and enjoying what everybody else is doing to where you're actually expected to contribute. There's a certain point where if you show up back at dinner time, your parents or your friends are going to be like, hey, what did you bring, right? Or they text you ahead of time, like, hey, can you bring the salad? Can you bring the LaCroix? Oh, my gosh. right? Do you know what I'm talking about? There's an expectation where all of a sudden, if you show up to dinner, you're showing up with something. Or if you didn't show up with anything, you're probably going to be in the kitchen helping clean up. Right? There is a point where you begin to transition. And in our family, that timeline, that sort of thing is also the same. You show up, you're a baby Christian, right? You just gave your heart to Jesus. You don't have to do anything. There's zero expectation. You literally just get to show up and enjoy this newfound life, this new, and beginning to learn and just like, whoa, this is amazing. People love me. God loves me. Like, there's hope for my life. Like, and as you grow, as you mature, there needs to be a point where you begin to transition into contributing and helping and pouring into other people's lives as well. Does that make sense? For it to be a healthy family, it requires that. Okay, and we're going to look, as we kind of continue on, we're going to kind of look at sort of two sides of the same coin. We're going to look at two different kind of main places of connection and both the healthy and unhealthy sides of that. Is that okay? So number one, bum, 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 the holy kiss. Oh, man. Some of you guys are like, what? It's like, hey, listen, you invited a youth pastor to come speak, all right? No, I'm kidding. Listen, the holy kiss. Four times in the New Testament, it says this. It says, greet each other with a holy kiss. Right? Five times if you include the verse where it says a kiss of charity. Greet each other with a kiss of charity. Four times. Now, the last time I showed up, nobody was kissing me. So please don't. Okay? Do not. I will slap you right in the face. A boy tried to kiss Aria 2 weeks ago. Oh, man. It was not a holy kiss. Let me just tell you, it was not. And I was super proud of her. She said, she came up and told me, she's like, Dad, so-and-so, this boy, tried to kiss me at school. And I was like, oh, really? What happened, honey? Like, just like everything inside of me is just like, oh, Jesus, what's good? I'm about to show up, wreck shop in kindergarten, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, man. No, and she's like, I told him no. I'm like, oh, good. But what did he do? He kissed me. I was like, dang it. It's like, so then what did you do? She's like, I pushed him. And I said, don't do that again. I was like, honey, I'm so proud of you. And she's just like beaming. She's just like, yeah, that's right. I was like, listen, if that ever happens again, you're allowed to slap him. Right? And she's like, I'm going to get sent to the principal's office. I was like, that is worth it. Let me just tell you. It's okay, girl. She's like, I'll be proud of you. And she's like, I don't want to go to the office. And then she starts crying because she's afraid of going to the school office. And I'm like, no, 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 that's not what I meant, honey. Calm down, please. Like, kindergarten. Do you know what I'm saying? No, but a holy kiss. What is this holy kiss, right? Holy in the verse here, it actually means pure, morally right, and set apart. Now, a kiss in many cultures is just a way of greeting. I grew up in Kenya. And it was kind of like a mix of different cultures. And so I never knew when I showed up at church if somebody was going to try to kiss me on the cheek, give me a hug, or a high five. It's like as a 15-year-old boy, that was a strange, strange sort of experience to show up and be like, what are you, hug? Okay, all right. One time, this is the worst, like seriously, one of my most embarrassing moments showing up at church. I'm this white boy, this church of like 3,000 Kenyans, right? I go walking in, and there's this, I was like, 14 and a half, 15, and there was this really pretty, like 22, 23-year-old young adult that was like part of the team. She comes over and she goes to say hi. And now you got to understand, like, I'm one of the pastor's kids, and so it's just like everybody says hi to you. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's not like she comes over and she's like, hey, Dustin. I'm like, hi. And she goes in to like kiss my cheek, right? And of course, I turned the wrong direction, full on kiss on the lips, right? So I'm 14 and a half, mind you, full of insecurity. All right, I'm just like a total mess. I'm like, right? And then she goes to kiss my other cheek. So I panic and turn, and I turn again. I got a double kiss that morning. You know what I'm saying? One. Oh, God. I look at her, and she's like, she comes like, all right, see you later. And I just turn around, and like I just go sit down. I'm like, oh, God, what just happened? You know? So I'm just saying, please don't do that to me. All right? But it's interesting how in this sort of like reference, what Paul is doing is he's saying, listen, when you see each other, your greeting is set apart. It's different from every other greeting people experience in the world. When you show up, greet each other with a holy kiss, something that's set apart, something that is unique. When you're saying hi to each other, you're not just like giving a high five and walking away. You're greeting each other. You are connecting with each other. You're saying, hey, this is a safe place. I love you. You're welcome here. Like, you are unique. I appreciate you. What's going on in your life? We are greeting each other. Why? Because it fundamentally communicates to people that they found home. When you go home and you go to the family table, what happens? You're greeted. You're welcomed. You're asked about your day. You connect. And what Paul is saying is, listen, when people show up, they shouldn't just feel like this was a sports game or some business meeting. They should show up and be greeted in a way that's different from every other place in their life. They should show up and feel connected. They should show up and know, like, oh, wow, I don't know you, but, man, you're really welcoming. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, wow, like this is a strange experience. Like, this isn't normal. This isn't how I normally get greeted. You guys, are you tracking with this?
Yeah.
This is really powerful. It's a unique thing. It's interesting how, like physical connection does like physiological changes in people's body. As the body of Christ, we have a responsibility to model healthy family and connection. We have to model what it looks like to be healthy in family and in connection. When you hug someone, this is just some interesting stuff. So hugs are really powerful, right? I give hugs all the time. I'm a hugger. I grew up, like, my family's always hugging people and stuff. And so sometimes it's awkward or unique. You know, you go to shake someone's hand, you give them a hug, and they kind of, like, do this stiff body. And you're like, yeah, you probably didn't want a hug. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I won't do that again. You know? But it's interesting. Hugs do a few things. I want to just kind of tell you a couple things. Hugs release oxytocin and reduce norepinephrine and cortisol. So norepinephrine and cortisol are stress hormones. So when you're stressed, those things rise in your body. When you give someone a hug, it actually causes those things to lower down. Isn't that crazy? Listen, trust me, I'm not a doctor, so please don't judge me, right? Okay? I'm going to do my best. They also release serotonin. Right? You guys know what serotonin does in your body? All right, keep going. This is like through different studies and stuff. Hugs build trust and safety. Like, when you give a kid a hug, it's telling him, oh man, I can trust you and this is a safe place. This is really cool. It helps boost self-esteem. It can help balance the nervous system. This is all just from a hug. Isn't that crazy? So honestly, why? If you're married, don't do this if you're not married, okay? Just caveat. Because a hug after 20 seconds puts all of this into overdrive. Like, not even in a sexual way. I'm just talking physiological. Physiologically, if you, like, see your spouse practice this, go into the kitchen, give her a hug or him a hug, and hold on for at least 20 seconds. And it's incredible. Your heartbeat will actually change and begin to drop. Yeah. Anxiety just plummets, and there's an actual, like, chemical release in your body that causes peace and safety and connection. It's crazy. Hugs are really powerful, but they can also be really, like, harmful. Do you know what I'm saying? When there's stuff, there's underlying issues happening. We have a responsibility to model what it looks like to be healthy in this context. And because there's, of all the different things, obviously I have really healthy boundaries when I'm hanging out with teenagers and all different stuff, right? There's like I keep really firm boundaries with things. But you also have to recognize that we have a responsibility to say, like, you know what? A hug is okay. Like, I can give you a hug and you need to know it's safe here. Like, you can trust these people. Does that make sense? Like, we can't react out of fear of, like, oh man, like, I'm not gonna, like, touch anybody or see anybody or just stand stiff. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's important. I want to talk about this. There's two examples of this sort of, like, I'm calling it an unholy kiss, but just to, like, show an example of the difference between what Paul was talking about. There's two kind of unique stories. The first is in 2 Samuel 20, verses 9 through 10. I'm going to just read this for you. It says, "Then Joab said to Amasa, 'Are you in health, my brother?' And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. But Amasa did not notice the sword was in Joab's hand, and he struck him with it in the stomach, and his entrails poured out on the ground, and he did not strike him again. Thus he died, and then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Richi. Now this was in the middle of like a rebellion against David, but it points a picture of what can happen when your life, you've stewarded brokenness and unhealthy relational connection. Something that was designed and meant to establish connection and trust all of a sudden does the complete opposite. I want to show you another verse. This is one you guys might be familiar with. In Luke 22, 47 through 48, this is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. It says, while he was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? What's important to see is that what makes this sincere greeting a powerful tool of connection is what also makes it destructive when the person involved is not healthy and has unresolved brokenness in their life. Now, it's interesting. Some of you guys may have even experienced this where you have a friend, right? Like you show up and they smile at you and they greet you and they're like, hey, what's up? But you know what they were just gossiping about you before you showed up. Do you know what I'm saying? Hopefully you're not the one doing that, but oftentimes we have fallen into this trap where we present this sort of picture of, man, I love you, you're awesome, and really you just are just ticked at them. You're harboring frustration, you're harboring unforgiveness. Maybe you came from a home that used manipulation as a tool to like motivate behavioral change. And so you can't help but you find yourself falling into patterns of this sort of same relationship, relationally connecting with people in this way, where you keep everything like kosher on the surface, where everyone's smiling and happy and like, oh, it's good to see you. But inside, you're just a wreck and a mess. This picture of what Joab and this other guy did, where it's like he didn't even know there was a sword in the guy's hand. And it says he stabbed him and his entrails spilled out. I know this is a really graphic picture, but I'm going to tell you, that's what it feels like, doesn't it? How many of you guys have experienced that? I know I have, multiple times, where it was like you go to greet someone, and then it just feels like your whole insides just got spilled out. I don't want to be super graphic with you guys this morning, but I want you to get that what makes this sort of greeting and connection powerful is also when you have not stewarded your own growth. When you have not stewarded your own heart and the health in your life, this powerful thing becomes something that the enemy can use for destruction and disconnection. This honestly is one of the reasons why people will come into a church, they'll think everything's happy, and they'll leave and they'll say something along the lines of, man, those are a bunch of hypocrites. They show up and they have an expectation for something, and they experience something different, and it feels like, man, I got betrayed there. My trust was broken. Like, what happened? Why? Because we smile and we greet, and it communicates, hey, this is a safe place. And then they experience something different. Now, our church is amazing. You guys are incredible people. I have not really experienced that here. We're just talking about all the other churches, right? But on a practical level, I want to encourage you to be aware of your heart. To be aware of what you're experiencing and feeling. When you go to see something, when I see Buddy, if inside I'm like, like I can feel a frustration rise up, I know, listen, we got to talk. We got to work this out. Because our relationship, our connection is worth more than stewarding frustration and bitterness. Our relationship is worth more. What God is doing in our lives and in our community through us is worth more than the fear of confronting something that happened. The desire to connect to a group of people because I just shared gossip, I'm telling you what, the cost for that is too high. To use the secrets of people's lives to connect with other people, the cost is too high. We are called to something where when people come into our home, when people come into our family, there's a fundamental sense of connection and trust, and it's not just a surface level, it's real. It goes deep. Does that make sense? All right, next one, number two, what every joint supplies. Now, this is talking about physical body, right? Physical joints, just clarifying. I am a youth pastor, and most of the time somebody would have yelled out, 420, with a statement like this. Sorry. Good. If you don't get the humor, it's okay. Just moving on. Ephesians 4:16. I want to read this again out of the Passion Translation. It says this. It says, "For his body has been formed in his image and is closely joined together and constantly connected as one. And every member has been given divine gifts to contribute to the growth of all. And as these gifts operate effectively throughout the whole body, we are built up and made perfect in love." All right. So in the King James, in the New King James Version, it says, "From the whole body joined and knit together with what every joint supplies." That's why this way, I couldn't figure out a better way to say it. That's why I just said it this way. So forgive me. Listen, the health of the body is dependent on each of us bringing what we have been given. We were designed to contribute. We were designed to carry something of life into the body. Does that make sense? It's interesting when you look at your physical body, right? What this the analogy that Paul is using here is that we are the body of Christ. And just like that, we all have different roles and giftings. We've all been like uniquely gifted. You have something special. When the elbow doesn't do what the elbow is supposed to do, the whole body suffers. I know that's silly, but if you play tennis, do you know what I'm talking about? I don't really play tennis. Just saying, right? Or if your knee, like when I hurt my knee, I'm going to tell you what, like it's just a little tiny piece of cartilage, a little tiny piece of meniscus, just a little small little thing. I'm going to tell you how much pain my whole body was in. Every movement, every step I'm trying to do something, and I'm like, oh God, like help me, Jesus, I can't even walk upstairs right now. Like, are you guys tracking with me? See, when one of us is hurting, it affects the whole body. When you're in a place of pain and trial and brokenness, there's nothing wrong with that, but it does affect the whole body in a good way and in an unhealthy way. And we're going to look at the two sides of this. Is that okay? All right. So if we kind of pull ourselves back to the family table too, so think about it this way, right? At a family table, when everybody's contributing something, the food usually is what? Better. It's awesome. Do you know what I'm saying? We're like when it's a potluck, like a good style potluck, not like the lazy potluck, but like the good potlucks, it's amazing, right? You get to taste all different sorts of food. When you are inviting people over to your house for dinner, it's like people get to contribute the best thing that they make. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you don't want me showing up and bringing a pie, do you know, or a cheese dip. You want Mick to show up and bring his queso with like chorizo and all that, just I don't even know what's in there. It's magic. It's pure gold. It's cheese gold, all right? That's what it is. Do you know what I'm saying? You don't want me showing up and bringing that. You want him to show up and bring that. What happens is we get to bring the best of what we contribute, and we get to draw from each other's strengths. And as a whole, there's a synergistic effect where everything gets better exponentially. Does that make sense? So the conversation is better, jokes and laughter is better, right? We get to celebrate with each other's victories, and we get to support each other in each other's trials and difficult circumstances. We get to lean on each other's strengths and giftings. We get to lean on each other. Not everyone has to know how to deep fry the turkey. Do you know what I'm saying? You just invite Caleb for that. Do you know what I'm saying? I would probably burn my house down. Just saying. All right, so what's the difference between healthy connection in this way and healthy support and the unhealthy version? Like, what's the difference? Well, there's kind of two ways outwardly, right? So we each have unique gifts, like I said, but we also have potential brokenness and chaos that we've stewarded in our lives. Okay? Now notice the difference. If you've been, you know, in a place of brokenness, like you came out of brokenness, right? You had some sort of trauma, some sort of thing happen. There's nothing wrong with that. You shouldn't hide it. We're not talking about that. Notice I said stewarded. Stewarded. You've hung on to it. You've let it fester. You didn't deal with it. You let it grow into something. And when that begins to take place, it spills out. You can't help but it spill out to people around you. It's interesting. It's amazing how much grace you have for your kids when you know that they are like incapable of contributing and handling themselves. Do you know what I'm saying? Like no one expects a baby to clean up their high chair, right? I mean that would be silly. Like for a baby to be eating and you're like, "What are you doing, Natalie? Why are you throwing your food on the ground?" It's like, well, no, you're one. That's what one-year-olds do. You know what I'm saying? But if I did that, if I came to your house and I'm like eating and throwing food on the ground and like, I probably wouldn't get invited back. Do you know what I'm saying? But the thing is we do this emotionally. And we justify it saying like, oh man, I came, you don't know my life. You don't know where I came from. And you have these undealt with, unresolved issues. You show up into a relationship and you just let it all spill out onto everybody else. You walk into a conversation and it's like, you're just like, just on everybody. And then they're like, hey, dude, you might want to calm down. That's like a little unhealthy in this context, you know? Like, they're like, you don't know where I came from. You don't know my life. No, actually, I do. You just shared it all, actually. I do. No, I'm, you know, being facetious. But does that make sense? When you steward those things of brokenness, when you steward those places of hurt, they begin to spill out. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And what happens is we begin to create messes in relationships around us that sometimes we're not even aware of. You know, some of you maybe have even experienced, like, you experienced the same sort of dynamic in relationship, and you're like, man, everybody is this way. Like, if you go from job to job, and you're like, my boss, I always have a bad boss. Well, actually, your boss may not be the problem. Joseph was in prison, and he still, like, rose up through the ranks of prison. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're healthy, you can have a really unhealthy boss, and you can still be okay. Do you know what I'm saying? If you have a reoccurring problem in relationships, if you find yourself dating the same sort of person over and over again, if you find yourself in jobs where your boss is always this way, your friends are always doing this, I'm going to tell you what, you need to listen to that warning sign and recognize you're the one with the problem. You're the one with the unresolved issues, the brokenness, the hurt, something is going on in there that you have not taken care of. And it's spilling out into people around you. It's making messes. So there's like this sort of outward sort of thing. We are, like the underline there is, we're not taking responsibility for our inner world, and our brokenness and chaos begins to make messes around us. So that's kind of like the unhealthy outward side. There's an inside as well. There's an inwardly sort of way when we're hurting and we're injured. When there's an organ in your body that's hurting or injured, right? It creates a draw on the rest of your body's systems. Does that make sense? Right? White blood cells get produced and sent to that injury. You get swelling, inflammation, that sort of thing. When you have some sort of pain or some sort of something going on, your body, it creates a draw and your body goes to try to get it whole and healthy, right? And fixed. The goal is that as your body's resources kind of divert from other things, it can focus on that area, get it whole and healthy, and then go back to normal. What shouldn't happen is, like, if you have, like, gut health, if, like, this is just an example. Again, I'm not a doctor, so please forgive my simplistic sort of explanation of this. When you have, like, gut issues, right, when you have, like, some sort of problem going on in your gut, your body starts diverting resources from things it should be doing to focus on trying to get it healthy. But you continue to do whatever behavior or whatever thing you're doing that's producing that unhealth in your gut, and so your body's continually facing this draw on its resources. And honestly, this is where, like, eczema and autoimmune disorders and different things like that can show up in people's bodies, and there doesn't seem to be a direct cause because their body doesn't have the resources available to deal with those problems. Does that make sense? Your liver is actually one of your best fat-burning organs. Did you know that? If you can get your liver healthy, you will accelerate, like, fat metabolism. What happens to be your liver also has to filter out toxins that you're eating. So if you're eating a ton of toxins and sugars and different things, your liver's focused on doing that and not on its main job, which is burning fat and fat metabolizing. Isn't that interesting? But in our body, in our sort of like analogy of the body of Christ, it's the same way. When you've stewarded hurt and brokenness in your life, you create a draw on the body. Now, it's healthy in the sense that, yeah, you just experienced something traumatic. Oh my gosh, we need to support you. Let's get you help. Let's counseling, whatever's needed. You know what I mean? Like, if something took place at home, we're going to show up. We're going to help rebuild your kitchen or whatever it happens to be. Does that make sense? Like, we support that thing. We come in to get it healthy. But if you are not fighting for your own health, it begins to create a constant draw on those people around you. This is also a way that you can look at what's called codependency. Now, codependency is a tricky thing. When I sit in counseling appointments and talk with people, I feel like it's one of the hardest things to have people actually understand the way it looks in relationship. Codependency is this thing where one of the probably easiest ways to define it is I'm expecting you to work on my problem more than I work on my problem. Does that make sense? So whether it's spousal, like I expect Savannah to work on my problem more than I am. Like, I expect you to tell me how awesome I am, to love on me more than I'm taking care of that internal sort of well. So what happens is that it becomes a constant draw. And over time, it will create bitterness and resentment in my wife. Like, it's like I keep telling you I love you, and it's just like this bottomless pit. Like, you don't get it, right? That's codependency. I'm dependent on you to make up for something that I'm lacking. Now, this is like in relationships, sometimes it turns into this thing of like, I expect the church to do this. This is the church. You're supposed to love people. You're supposed to support people. You're supposed to fill in the blank, right? But the moment that individual has the idea that you are supposed to work on my problem more than I'm working on my problem, it's unhealthy. It creates this unhealthy draw that over time will build resentment and disconnection and hurt on both sides. And so what happens is when you experience brokenness or hurt, you are meant to go after that place of healing yourself. And the body comes around to support and surround you to provide a sense of stability for you to get healthy, not for you to just maintain where you're at. Does that make sense? The goal is that you get healthy and strong, and so then that way you can go back to being a contributor. Are you guys tracking with me? There's been times where my parents would invite us over for dinner, and like we just had a baby, and like we have no money, and like whatever, like you know what I'm saying, right? You have a baby, and it's like all of a sudden just chaos hits, and you're like, oh Lord. My parents invite us over, and there's zero expectation for us to do anything or bring anything. Why? Because they're being mom and dad. They're like, psh, we know you don't have any food in your house. Come over for dinner. It's okay. You know, and we show up and we're like, oh God, we're a mess. We don't know what to do with this screaming child, you know. And what do you do? The grandpa comes over, picks up the baby and holds him and takes care of him. You can just kind of sit in the living room and just like, oh God, I can live. Like, right? If we stay in that place, do you think that's going to be real healthy? No. What they're doing is they're providing support so that we can kind of figure some things out, get healthy, learn some skills, see, oh, like, wait a second. You don't just have to let the baby scream at you the whole time? Like, there's things you can do? Like, how did you do that? Do you know what I'm talking about? Right? Like, and so what ends up happening is you see, like, oh, wow, I can do this. And so then you practice it, you work on it, and you get stronger and healthier, and it transitions back to the next time we show up. Maybe not the next time, but in a few times we show up, and what do? We bring food, we wash the dishes, we do whatever. Like, we go back to contributing each one our own unique gift. Does that make sense? The way it's supposed to be in the body of Christ is when you experience pain or hurt or brokenness or some sort of tragedy in your life, we are meant to support each other. But it's meant to be a support for you to get healthy and strong. Does that make sense? Which means that you actually have to work on you. You have to work on your stuff. You have to work on whatever hurt is going on in your life, whatever trauma or brokenness, or maybe it's just something practical like going and getting a job. Do you know what I'm saying? Like actually finding maybe a new place of employment. Maybe like you need some support for that transition. Does that make sense? Like whatever that looks like, there is a part that you have to play in your own journey to health and wholeness. Are you guys ready? All right, so we are responsible. This is the last blank there in your notes. We are responsible for our emotional health. so that we're able to supply what we are created to supply, so we can give what we are created to give. You have something special to contribute. There's no one like you. There is no one like you. There's no one that can do what you are created to do. No one can speak the way you speak. No one can share the way you share. Nobody can handle situations the way you handle situations. You are a unique treasure. And this is not just some pep talk sort of phrase. You are uniquely created and designed to give something back, to share life to people around you. And we want, as a body, us to get healthy into that place so that you can step into that place of identity and releasing what you were created to release. Amen.